you made it through all the starts and stops of your tech business. And when you're with Amex Business Platinum, you can count on a network of benefits to keep going, including access to over $1,000 in business and travel value annually. And thanks to 5x membership rewards points on flights and prepaid hotels booked on AmexTravel.com, you and your plugged-in engineers can get rewarded for working in the cloud. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/AmexBusiness.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You know, we had a lot of people come. Shout out to everybody that was in Houston. And I realized that there's different people that have different experiences when they, some people are just getting into investing. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to kind of do something for people to have as a reference point that they've never, like if they've never got in or if they're still trying to figure out like this investing game. Gotcha. So put together some 10 commandments for investors, the 10 investing commandments that I think can be a good reference point for people to always think back to. So one, rule number one is mm-hmm. to buy low and sell high. Vitally important.
Yes.
Most people do the exact opposite. They buy high and sell low. You got to have patience. You never buy at highs. We talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. Wait for pullbacks. And if you're selling it, sell after you've made substantial gains on your investment. So buy low, sell high. Number two is buy and hold.
So yes.
You know, Ian's big on that. Whether it's real estate, whether it's crypto, whether it's stock, if you buy good assets, you have to hold it for a long period of time. The short flip is going to be quick money, but the real wealth is in buying and holding. That's vitally important. Diversification. Thou shalt diversify. Now, some people say, you know, diversification is for people that's not well versed. But when I say diversification, I'm not just talking about just in stocks. I'm talking about just in investing, period. So it's like real estate.
Talk stocks, about it.
Crypto. Business. You can't put all your eggs in one basket. That's vitally important.
So commodities.
Thou shalt diversify. Thou shalt invest with patience. You have to have patience. Because if you invest in with no patience, you're going to get washed out. And that's done on purpose a lot of times, especially that happens in crypto all the time where the whales will wash you out. They'll drop the price on purpose and then you get scared. You sell your position. So mm-hmm. you have to have patience. That's
what, important. What number was that?
Number four.
That could have been number one for me.
Number five.
That's a good point.
Thou shalt understand what thy invest in. So never invest in anything that you don't have a good understanding in.
Mm-hmm. Like NFTs?
Yes, exactly. If you don't understand it, stay away from it. Mm-hmm. Warren Buffett said this 20 years ago. Never invest at the top. Thou shalt never invest at the top.
No matter what market it is.
No matter Please. What. You got to wait. You got to wait for a pullback.
That Rolex market is in shambles, not to cut you off. Everybody else paying $50,000 for the little Boo Bay Rolex.
Authorized dealers only.
That's a fact.
Yeah. That means, look, when you see the fit, and that's given to you. 52-week high, look at
for
it.
For a reason.
There's a reason why they show it.
Mm-hmm.
This is important. Thou shalt reinvest profits. That's the real way to That's gain wealth. So when you're making money, it's not, okay, I invested $1,000, I made $500, now I'm going to take that $500, I'm going to buy Balenciaga. Reinvest that $500. Like, because there's a thing called compound interest, which is mm-hmm. called one of the wonders of the world. But that only happens if you are constantly just reinvesting periodically, but also reinvesting profit as well. So reinvest profit. Number nine, thou shall stay informed at all times. So watch Market Mondays every single week.
Please.
Read, stay informed.
You have every day.
Education is a ongoing journey. It's not like this isn't college where you just take a course. Cradle to the grave. Ongoing situation. And the last one is thou shalt keep emotions in check, because emotions and investing do not go well together. You cannot be emotional. You have to be level, even keel, non-emotional.
Mm-hmm.
there's reasons why these terms like sniper and target are used, because that's the kind of mindset that you have to have. You gotta mm-hmm. you gotta have operate with precision and not take emotion into it. So yeah. there's a bunch of others that you could potentially incorporate, but those are 10 that I think would be good for people that are just, you know, sometimes you just need a reminder. And like I said, just from a lot of the questions that I'm getting, I understand that there's a lot of people that are still new in investing, still mm-hmm. trying to figure it out. So when in doubt, refer back to those commandments.
Damn,
and you'll have that bread to break up. If not, 25 years. I want to wake up.
Mm-hmm. I thought two tattoo index was going to fall in there.
Well, for sure.
When I get my verse next week, number 11. You know what I mean? But even the long term hold and it being even kill.
Yeah.
In partnership. Like, look how long Steve and Bill worked together at Microsoft. Like, all the gains are in the long term hold. Like, when you said diversification, right. Stocks, futures, real estate, business, intellectual property, international exposure, it makes life a lot simpler. Gold.
The
whole gambit. And then, so before we bring our esteemed guest on, I do want to say this, because, you know, being that, you know, this is a lifelong journey, right?
And yes.
So for myself, I was a financial advisor for 12 years before we started doing this. So
was this when you lived in Baltimore or Hawaii?
New York.
No, that's Disney.
Life facts.
No, that's New York.
Definitely. So we've been doing this for 6 years. So this is an 18-year journey of mm-hmm. trying to help people understand finance. Then Troy was a teacher for probably the same amount of time. So he probably an 18-year journey as far as on education, right? Yeah. So you got to put 20 years in that. Yeah. I say that to say this moment that we've kind of poured countless hours
into
on the education and the finance side, and then, you know, with Earn Your Leisure and then Market Mondays, it's been millions of hours done.
Yeah, been doing this
and we accumulated that into one body of work, one project, which is our first book that we're going to come out with, right?
Yes.
So here's the deal. The book comes out January 15th, and it's called You Deserve to Be Rich. Now, you can pre-order the book, right? So
where can I pre-order it?
I'm going to tell them the whole thing.
Here it comes.
But we want to do a special incentive. So for 48 hours during this election cycle, for 48 hours, we're giving you an incentive. Anybody that pre-orders the book, keep in mind, the book, I think it costs $30 or $27, depending on if you get the hard cover or the soft cover. Troy did an actual option boot camp like months ago, where it was like an hour and 20 minutes, where he gave the whole setup of like, this is like the ground level of everything that you should know as far mm-hmm. as like, what is an option, a call, put the difference. It's a whole like foundational training.
Yes.
If you pre-order the book in the next 48 hours, you will get that video for free.
Oh, that's fire.
And like I said, the book is like $20. Yeah. But the point is, in full transparency, we need to sell the books in the pre-order state to make it to the New York Times list. That's vitally important.
Mm-hmm.
And very rarely do I ask our community for anything, but I would say this. If we've ever helped you in any regards, if we ever mm-hmm. helped you make any money, if we've ever helped you, you know, be inspired, if we've helped you buy a home, if we helped you get a stock portfolio, this would be a good opportunity to repay that in some regards. $30. Yes. But it's meaningful. Mm-hmm. The book is a life-changing body of work within itself.
But that's an amazing addition too.
No, I appreciate
that's fire.
So you go to youdeservetobericbook.com. youdeservetobericbook.com.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-order the book. Guys, this is helpful, because if we make it to the New York Times, that opens up opportunities for other people. It's a space that you don't see a lot of Black authors in.
It's rare.
The finance, wealth space. So it's helpful. I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm not gonna lie to you. It is helpful. But we wanted to give that added benefit bonus because I mean, to me, that's a no brainer. For it's $30. I mean, if you and if you purchased it already, get another one.
Yeah,
it's Christmas time. Just give, give it to somebody.
You principals, superintendents, order it for your schools. The 14th, January 14th, it drops.
Yeah,
but you and it's a good lesson.
You can pre-order right now.
Yeah, but it's a good lesson too. Every purchase that you make to know the ROI, incredibly important. So to add the options component to.
Yeah, that was a lot of questions. A lot of people, the earners were joining. Like, where's the first? It's here.
And that gives you a preview to EYL University.
That's a fact.
So it's a double-edged sword. But, you know, just wanted to add as much. David Shan said something.
He did.
He said, make the price substantially lower than the value that you're going to give.
Yes.
So I feel like for $30, the price is substantially lower than the value that is provided with the book alone. But then when you add the options on top of that, it's a no-brainer. But with that being said, it is a very important time in American history, and we have a historic election tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we wanted to bring a few of our friends, friends of the program.
Yes.
On to have a last-minute discussion and encouragement to our audience to vote tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because tomorrow is the last opportunity. So first we'll bring up Jemele Hill, esteemed journalist. How you doing?
I'm good. You see what I'm doing now? I'm pre-ordering this book.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate you.
And if I may, as somebody whose memoir came out 2 years ago, and by the way, still available on Amazon if you guys want to get it.
Yes.
People don't understand this book struggle. Like, it's real. And I hope that your followers follow your advice, because as you said, Black authors on the New York Times bestseller list, it's tough, and it's tough no matter what space that you're in. I didn't make it. And literally, because another thing too that you have to factor in is when your book comes out and what else is being released that week. Mm-hmm. And I forgot what else was released that week, because the New York Times, they have this very crazy formula nobody quite understands. They don't make it public about how you're able to make this list. And if you're in the author space making this list, although it's not a validation of your work in the respect, it doesn't mean your work is good or bad or awful if you don't make it, but it allows you to continue forward, particularly if you want to stay in the book space. It's one thing to be able to put on the resume and say New York Times bestseller, which leads to you getting more opportunities and other things. And so for Black authors, it can be especially tough. So let me reiterate the message to your listeners that Black people that you support who have books, buy the books for friends. And a little bit of advice I will give to you all that I learned to be quite helpful, because I'm often asked to speak at various universities and places. I made a book by part of the writer. So that also helps if you say, hey, you know, on top of paying what my speaking fee is, y'all gotta get these 4,000 books. Also very helpful. Now, sometimes the New York Times, and make sure that they get them from a local bookstore that the New York Times counts as part of being a bestseller.
That's a hell of a gem. Yeah. Thank you.
That's my book.
The more you know.
For y'all.
Guns
blazing. So, and then we have to bring our other guest on as well. Senator Tim Scott of the great state of South Carolina.
Thank God. I thought y'all were trying to cut the brother out because he's got an R by his name. So I said, man, I got you.
I'm going to look out for you.
No. Hey, listen, she gave really good advice. As an author, I got to say, even though it's not my place, her advice was spot on. Mm-hmm. If you want to be a best-selling author and you're not using local bookstores, New York Times is going to discriminate against your selection. And I will say real time that they have a complex, complicated, and layered approach to awarding the New York Times bestseller. It's not based on just sales.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, a very interesting
algorithm.
So in order to get there, you better be using local bookstores, or you will be unhappy with the number you sell and how it does not work towards your New York Times best-selling status.
Yeah, appreciate that.
Noted.
All right, guys. First and foremost, welcome.
Thank you.
Do you guys know each other?
This is my first time.
Yes. I know who Tim Scott is, but I have never met him. This is our first interaction.
Well, yes, ma'am.
welcome to the show.
Let's play nice. One day away. Let's be kind. Come on.
I want to make this just a free flowing conversation. Everybody kind of jump in, but I just feel like it's just vitally important for people to just hear that. You know, this is the final call, right? This is the last opportunity for anybody. I don't know how you're undecided at this point, but you know, there might be some people that's undecided, or it might just to get pushed to actually take part in the political process. There's a lot of people that just are not going to vote. So here's what I've been hearing from people on the Democratic side. They said that their internal polling shows that Kamala is winning the election by a very thin margin. And Trump's narrative, he's already trying to put out that there's voter fraud, so that if he does lose, he's going to say that he did not lose. He's putting that out there already to kind of taint the election, so it's not going to be certified, with the anticipation that if it needs to go to the courts, and a lot of the Republican, you guys run the court system, right? On the Supreme Court. You know, you're right. You're on the Supreme Court. And some of the state courts as well. So is that a fair narrative that I'm hearing, or is that something that is not actually true?
I think it's certainly fear-mongering a little bit there. If you think about Wisconsin, you think about Pennsylvania, you think about Michigan, you think about all the battleground states, they're typically run by Democrats, not Republicans, number one. Number two, I think the reality of it is that I've been on the ground. Frankly, I did events in Detroit, I did events in Philly, I was in Ohio as well, Wisconsin, Milwaukee, bouncing around Las Vegas, Nevada. And I can tell you one thing, there's lots of momentum, lots of energy on the ground. But at the end of the day, we expect a fair election. And my assumption is based on the on-the-ground experience in the last 96 hours or 4 or 5 days, is that we are in a strong position to bring home the victory. There are a couple very positive signs from my perspective. Number one, Trump is outperforming with women better than Kamala is outperforming with men. So when you look at the divide, Trump's doing very well with men, and Kamala's doing very well with women. Bottom line is that Trump is doing slightly better with women than Kamala is doing with men. And so that is one very important signal. Number two, African-American men. Trump is outperforming his 2020 numbers with African-American men, even though in all seven battleground states, the African-American male vote, to your point earlier, is actually down a bit. So we're outperforming in a strong and necessary voting bloc for Democrats. If that all plays out, then we are in a strong position to be victorious. The caveat out there is that there is an undercounted, I heard on the news recently, the progressive woman, typically white, is not being factored in as much as she has been in the past. I don't know what that means and how that plays out, but ultimately, based on the amount of information we have today, based on all the polling data that I've seen, we are in a very strong position to do very well in the seven battleground states, and that will determine the outcome of this election.
So you don't. So you're not. So you think it's going to be a. You don't think voter fraud is a problem?
Well, listen, voter fraud is always a problem. The only question is, where is it enough to change the outcome of the elections? I'm not going to concern myself with that. I honestly believe that we're going to have a fair enough election to get the results that will determine the future of this nation. And so, as opposed to really going back and forth on something that none of us will be able to have any say until after it's all done, I'd rather spend the energy on why we need to elect four more years of President Donald Trump versus the last 4 years of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Okay.
I mean, this is interesting. Senator Scott, you brought up a lot of points. You talked about women obviously playing a huge role in this.
Massive
role. And women's reproductive rights have been a major issue. In fact, 73% of women have voted, say that their right, their choice. I wonder, Jamel, as you see it, from a woman's standpoint, the role, and I'm glad you brought up the progressive woman, has enough been done on that side from the Democratic Party, and then from the men's side, right? Like, we've talked about black men countless times on this show. Even when the mic was on during Kamala's interview, she said she's having an issue with men. Has enough been done from men? I guess a two-part question, and specifically black men, to engage them to get to the polls and vote?
Well, understand in general, Black people in voter participation has been down since, I believe, 2000, since Obama's the second reelection of Obama. So, I mean, what we saw in the first time in history, it was that more Black people voted than white people in that election, which was quite amazing. And so since then, there's been a steady decrease, and a lot of it maybe has been a level of dissatisfaction, a lot of other factors, some of which maybe some of us also brought that whole post racial America stuff, which wasn't quite true. But I would say for women in particular, and I'm speaking both from this personally and as, I guess, if you want to put me in the role as a media pundit, I am someone, I had an abortion when I was 25 years old. And the idea and the thought of this, I know the usual Republican talking points is this a state's issue now and all of that. But I think we very much know who owns minimizing the reproductive rights for women in this country. And that person is Donald Trump. And I think for a lot of women, especially older women, because if you pay attention to what's happening in Iowa, where Kamala Harris is doing quite well with, are the women who had to grow up without that being a right. And what they don't want to see is things go backwards. And while I know that there has been this sort of wordplay about whether or not there'll be a national abortion ban, where sometimes we hear, you know, where J.D. Vance says yes, and other people say yes that are around in Trump's circle and he remains noncommittal, the fact is we can't afford to take that chance. You know, particularly when you have two more Supreme Court justice openings that'll possibly happen in a for the next whoever the next president is, then you further look at what the other erosion of rights could look like. So for women, this is all very serious. And I think one way that in some ways was a missed opportunity in engaging men on this issue is understanding that this is not just a woman's issue. This is a household issue. This is an issue for the women that are in these men's lives that they care about. And we have seen repeatedly, like with what's happening in Texas, there's just been so much evidence of how harmful this has been, because a lot of these states had trigger laws. So as soon as Roe versus Wade was undercut at the federal level, trigger laws went into place that placed very restrictive abortion bans in places. And you are seeing women dying as a result of this. And so one of the things that I saw recently, that MSNBC did a panel with Black male voters, and they talked to the men in particular who the women in their lives have been impacted by this. So this is a very galvanizing issue for women, but it is not just a women's issue. It is something that men should concern themselves about at all. And with Black voters, period, but especially with Black men, I get it. It's frustrating. And I think the pace of change has been very difficult for our community, period, but especially for Black men. They're looking at, you know, feeling displaced economically, feeling displaced from an educational standpoint. And despite the gains that have been made, sometimes the lack of progress becomes the headline and not looking at how the incremental change has actually happened. And so they feel disengaged. And I've often said to men and to Black voters, period, and I hope to the men that are listening to our conversation, is that the best way to release your power or to give up your power is when people convince you you don't have any. And so by that measure, they have some of the disenchanted voters, because I agree with you. I don't think this is really an issue of more Black men voting for Donald Trump. I think this is Black men versus the couch. The undecideds are, I'm just the couch.
But they're definitely, no, we have to be fair. There's definitely a lot of Black men.
It's an uptick. So I don't want to disregard that.
Yeah, I think there's a couple points. Number one, I was looking down because I was looking up our RBG's comments about the rights, the Roe v. Wade going back to the states. She said there is literally, I'm paraphrasing what she said, there is no foundation for a national ban or national conversation. This really is a state's rights issue. And that is what she said. I wanted to make sure I had that right before I came on the air and said that. That's paraphrasing what she has said in the past, but very clearly, one of the most important progressive justices on the court, perhaps ever, thought of the issue of abortion as a state's issue and not having a national footing. I will say very clearly, President Trump has not just been clear, he's been crystal clear that it should not be a national issue, and therefore there cannot be a national ban on something that is not a national issue. He went further on to say that there are no votes on either side, Republican or Democrats. There are not enough votes on either side to get it done, a national ban. So that issue is an issue that is laid to rest without question. The issue of Black voter participation, but specifically Black men voting, we saw the largest turnout of Black folks in Georgia in the history of the state just in 2022. I would say that if what we see in the polls holds true tomorrow night, by the time this voting is done, so to speak, you'll see the largest increase in Black male support of a Republican candidate in my lifetime, almost 60 years. I know you thought it was only 40 years, but it's actually. So one of the reasons why you'll see that is what she was just talking about. Educational outcome is, in fact, the primary indicator of income, wealth, position in society, and the lack of government intervention in your life, including incarceration. And so for us to focus on the primary issue negatively impacting Black men is to focus on the important issue of education. The better your education system, the better your results. That's just carte blanche. Number two, I'd say economically, if we were able to separate the issue, Black men are frustrated because our paychecks are smaller because of the impact of inflation over the last 4 years. So much so that you can measure it in the frustration and in the turnout. This is the last point I'll make. For all of my life, we as a race of voters have been taken for granted by the Democrat Party, and to a large extent, for a long time, ignored by the Republican Party. The Republican Party says, if everyone's going to vote against us, why bother? The Democrats Party said, if everybody's voting for us, why bother? With only one out of four Black men being interested in engaging in this process, Republican or Democrat, now both parties are engaging with Black men. What does that tell me? It tells me that power comes from being independent. I'm not suggesting you join the Republican Party. I'm not suggesting that you leave the Democrat Party. I am suggesting vote your values and vote your future. If we do that, I think you'll see a strong turnout for the Republican Party, not only for Donald Trump, but for Senate candidates as well. And hopefully, when this election's over, both parties will be far more interested in doing what I have already done, by the way, which is represent the issues that move people forward as one nation, mm-hmm. but also as the most vulnerable part of the economic link. It's one of the reasons why I created opportunity zones. It's one of the reasons why I focus on sickle cell anemia research that's led to the CRISPR breakthrough that now can cure sickle cell. It's another reason why I focused on HBCUs, and in a bipartisan fashion, I worked with Democrats and Republicans to restore the opportunity scholarship momentum in DC and around the country, because if we get education right, if we reform the incarceration system, not just the criminal justice system, but the incarceration system, more men, particularly of color, will have brighter futures. And that's what we have done. That is measurable success in reasonable time. And if the people vote on their values and their issues, we will make great gains.
Speaking of gains, I want to go to the Jamel. Did you want to reply? I can.
Well, what I would say, and in addition to, you know, applauding Tim Scott for his work, is that, but you know, there's also.
Give him more time.
Yes. Yeah. You just cut me right there, because I'm sure that'll be the clip that goes for the
movie.
Okay. I'm going to clip that. Social media team. Yeah.
I applaud you for the work that you've done in that regard. But also, there is the issue of the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, which you were a part of. We didn't see any movement on that. Yes. And there's a lot of There's a lot of reasons why, and I know that is an issue that is critical to Black men. It also does not help when you have your presidential candidate saying that the police deserve full immunity, which is also an issue for Black men. And while as much as the First Step Act, which, by the way, was, if I'm, and again, you're the politician, so you know this, the timelines of this better than I am, than I do. Obviously, Donald Trump signed the First Step Act, and I know for a lot of Black men, that was a very critical piece of legislation. However, that being said, it was something that was bipartisan in the works before he got into office, but he was able to, obviously, y'all were able to push it through. But that being said, you have Bill Barr, who did a lot to try to undermine what the First Step Act was supposed to do. So I, when you talk about voting your values, either there is a disconnect in what those values are, because those are not the values that I get when I watch your presidential candidate, is that I get the exact opposite of everything you just said. Yeah. I get him talking about turning guns on protesters. I get him talking about full immunity for the police. So as much as I would like to say, oh, let's not, what you want people to do is like not take him seriously, or that's not what he means. If I got a that's not what he means one more time, it's just like, what's the real vision of the party, particularly as it relates to this issue? Because what I'm hearing at the top is not the things that you're saying.
Well, Jamel, I would question what you're saying in light of what we see on both sides of the aisle. That's one of the points I was making. Bottom line is simply this, that when you look at the First Step Act, any president before Donald Trump could have had legislation to reform our criminal justice system. They just didn't do it. The last time it was done, it was in the 1990s, when in fact they locked up more Black men as a result of the move from the Democrat Party to try to squash crime in the neighborhoods.
Which Republicans supported. Don't act like they didn't, because they did.
No. But I'm just saying it was sponsored by and led by the Democrat Party. That's something we can just look up. I'm not going to give you my opinion on any of these things, because they're really too important to just try to make a political punching bag out of it. I'm suggesting that Donald Trump could have passed on the First Step Act. I'm suggesting that he could have not worked with people in our community like the ACLU and Heritage Foundation and the Koch brothers and media personalities who may not want to be named in this conversation, who we both probably admire and respect. They were at the White House with me when we were about to take the pictures. I said, brother, you might want to get out of this frame. It may not be good for your TV contract. And so he said, you know what, Tim? I'm moving out the frame. And so the truth of the matter is that people coming together should be the way things get done. But you have to have a president willing to push it forward. Talk about unqualified immunity for law enforcement. Never a part of the police reform. Qualified immunity, always a part of the conversation. Qualified immunity suggests that what happened with George Floyd, he's going to jail for murder. What happened recently in D.C., lady getting shot in the face, arrested. What happened in Memphis with the officers beating up the African-American driver, arrested. So we should be careful on explaining the difference between qualified immunity and frankly, unlimited, you just do what you want to do, like it's the Wild Wild West. I would not support that. Final point on the police reform, because I spent 2.5 years of my life in this process, so I know it very well. I offered my friends on the other side unlimited amendments to do whatever they wanted to do, even though we were 70% of the bill was right where we wanted it to be on both sides. They walked away. Now, they said we would come back, and to his credit, not their credit, but to his credit, Cory Booker came back, and we still have conversations about criminal justice reform, police reform to this day. We're still working on legislation that we both have in our files right now that we talked about this year. And so the action continues, but many of the members that were there with us have decided to do something else with their time. And so we could go on with that one issue, or talk about criminal justice reform, or talk about education. But here's the question I keep asking all my friends who happen to be Democrats in the South, in the Black community. It is simply this. Are you better off now than you were? And the answer is no. That's why.
I think it depends on who you're talking to, with all due respect, because I lost my husband lost his grandmother to COVID. I lost a very dear friend of mine also to COVID. And yeah. So to tout are you better off than now than you were 4 years ago without the context of us being in a major pandemic, of which the president was, the president being Donald Trump, was wildly irresponsible with, of which remembering, yes, he was. He was wildly irresponsible.
Jamil.
Wildly. Okay. Wildly. Okay. The tape says that. Wildly irresponsible.
Let's just take NBC News, May of 2020, when they said it will take 5 years, if not 10 years, for there to be a vaccine available to save millions and millions upon lives. We said, I was there, we said that is just going to crush the American soul. In less than 12 months, in 9 months, using mRNA, German company and an American company, and NIH, CDC fumbled the ball for the first 4 weeks of COVID, getting their act together under President Trump's direction to get something done, absolutely without question. The most consequential decision made was to allow that public-private partnership to produce a vaccine. Still a controversial vaccine in the eyes of many, many people. But in the end, millions of lives likely saved through that action. We could debate so many issues. Good,
but what I'm saying is that when you proposed the question of better off than 4 years ago, I would have liked not to have lived through the time of not being able to leave my house. And there were economic factors that obviously influenced what some of the pricing was then. And so when we tell the story about what things looked like 4 years ago, we need to tell the complete story in the full context.
Mr. Mill, Tim, do you have to leave, Tim?
Yeah, I've got a TV interview and right this second. So I have to go to yeah. So, but let me just close with this, even though I'm going to irritate my team real quick here. But at the end of the day, I hope Jamel and I come back after the election and have
a
flash debate about future issues and initiatives that will have a positive and negative impact on our community. I'll close with my parting thought on COVID. I think it's a really important conversation that we can take a deep dive in even after this. I don't mind. I don't ever run away from a debate. I actually like to have a discussion. I like when they're civil, but we've been very civil and we're not going to come to the same point of agreement. But I will say without question that one of the most profound things done during COVID to help people who have to go to work, 80% of African Americans could not work from home. We had to go to our JOBs. The government says, shut the entire economy down. We gave out paycheck protection programs and cash to make sure that those who had to go to work had extra assistance. Now, was it done perfectly? We'll argue that later. But
I think you probably know what my mind is saying.
We know for sure nothing's done perfectly, but we also know that no other administration in the history of this world had to deal with a worldwide epidemic or challenge since 1918. So we can debate looking back on what could have been done or should have been done. But if you look forward through it, I'll take that debate all day long. And hopefully we'll do this in a couple of weeks when I'm available to come back. I unfortunately have 5 TV hits back to back to back for the next several hours. So
thank you. Thank you.
I don't want to cut y'all short, but I do appreciate your
patience
with our technology challenges. And he just said, stop talking. Okay. I'm glad that you have me back again. And Jamel,
I appreciate you, Senator Scott.
You've been compelling and smart. And unfortunately, I would like for you not to have a microphone next time we talk. I'll just repeat it for you.
Yeah. We will live to argue another day, Senator Scott.
Praise God. Okay. Yes.
Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and their tushies do too. Huggies Little Movers with its curved and stretchy fit. Moms know that there's nothing worse than an ill-fitting diaper, especially for your active babies. I love Huggies because I can rely on them to keep my baby covered while she moves around. You guys have heard about my sweet little baby. She just turned 1, deep into mobility. I am so excited about Huggies Little Movers because she can roll around, jump around, climb, which is everything she's doing. And I know that she is covered, and so am I in the cleanup.
And we all want the very best for our babies, and that's Huggies. Huggies Little Movers are curved, so babies feel comfy no matter how much they're moving around. And they're moving around a lot. They also offer up to 12-hour protection against leaks, which is a game changer. Get your baby's butt into Huggies Little Movers. We got you, baby.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.